You're listening to KTWH LP 99.5 FM, Two Harbors, Minnesota. What's happening is coming up with Chris Swanson, our mayor, having a little bit of a State of the State interview with him. That's a recorded interview from a couple days ago, followed, of course, by Kenny Blumenfeld's Weather Tidbits. You are listening to KTWH. Coming up, what's happening? You're listening to KTWH 99.5 FM, and as promised, I have Mayor Swanson, Chris Swanson, on the line with me. Thank you so much, Chris, for calling in with KTWH today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Katya. This is, I just love what the radio station is doing and what you're doing, and just such a great community thing. And so keep up the good work, and I'm happy to be here to chat with you.
Great. Well, it's really good to have you. I know it's been quite a while, and we've had a lot going on in our community as elsewhere all this year. So let's just start with some sort of basic. We do talk to Dan Walker frequently on the radio about the nuts and bolts, but I figured since we have you here, let's talk a little bit more about sort of the bird's eye view. Like, what do you see? I know it's not the beginning of the year, so we're too late to get you on the state of the, you know, state of the city, but what is your bird's eye view of Two Harbors right now? Where have we been? Where are we going?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I love that. As you know, I'm a little more visionary, so to be able to get up and do the bird's eye view or the 50,000-foot view and talk about the community and what's been happening and where we're heading is so much fun. I think one of the biggest things that I'm seeing over the last 4 years and even more shifting now is really an attitude of wanting to get things done and people starting to really step up and do different things. We're seeing a lot of different projects in the community. You know, when I first started the CIP, the council before me had started on the CIP journey. I know Councilor Glazer and Councilor Erickson were very involved in that, and it's really cool. The CIP, as many of you know, stands for the Capital Improvement Plan.
Yep.
And we had, you know, over the 4 years, we had these, you know, we had times where it was really successful and the kind of these false starts and there was questions, and we really every year looked at how do we do better, you know, how do we make sure things are happening the way we want to, the process is being followed, and, you know, and then you get to a point like we just did recently where last year, as part of our overall planning, we went and lobbied for the wastewater treatment plant. And what was great is the community, Lake County, the Chamber of Commerce, the city all came together. Castle Danger Brewery was in there. We all came together and we went down to the state and we lobbied our legislature. We got $11.5 million in direct appropriation money, which means there really is no strings to it. It is spend it on the wastewater treatment project. And so we saved the taxpayers literally millions and millions of dollars on a bunch of work that need to be done there. And why I'm sharing that story is if you think back like pre-capital improvement plan or even, you know, maybe some time in the past, you know, there wasn't always everybody coming together and collaborating. So, you know, we didn't have all that collaboration. Now we really have a deep amount of collaboration going on. Mm-hmm. And while we still think maybe there's some silos out there or less, maybe they're small silos, but they're out there. We're working really hard to make sure it's a collaboration that everybody has an opportunity to be heard. As I say with the council, let's turn over every rock we can, but then let's make a decision and stick with it. And I think that's been one of the neat things as I look at where we were at before, is that cultural shift of we can work together and get things done. So I'm really happy with that.
Yeah, it sounds to
and
me
there's,
like
there's many other things too.
I think the water treatment success was a real watershed moment for this community because it was such a statement of the state, you know, giving its trust to us. Like we can be stewards of Lake Superior and of our own town and of people coming through here and keep things.
Yes.
Sustainable and clean for indefinitely for, you know, I mean, that was a really big deal. I totally agree with you. So what I hear you saying is you see us like our identity is one of collaboration and people working together and not necessarily you know, one arm of the city having all the vision or all the power, but that everyone working together creates the vision.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the legislature even complimented us on that not that long ago about how they see us working together. And I like what you said, you know, we are working on these projects because we know this is important for the community. But we also have a lot of people that visit and pass through our area. And so as we were lobbying, we told the legislature there's additional pressure that gets placed on our treatment system because of the visitor traffic. And what we don't want is we don't want hard feelings from people who are forced to pay for that, saying, wait, why are all these other people using it? And so that really resonated with the legislature. And again, that collaborative, just work that we did was really, really quite fun too, just to be honest. It was very fun.
Yeah, that's great when it can be fun. And you probably met some people and built some relationships that will last beyond just this agreement too, I would hope.
Yeah, and some people really grew through it. I mean, I love watching people grow as they have to go down and meet and shake the hands of these influential people and explain what we're trying to do. And, you know, and then, I mean, like, who doesn't like getting one of the largest awards in Minnesota? I mean, this was one of the biggest, I mean, $11.5 million for a project for a town our size. You know, I think Duluth ended up getting a $12 million project, but $11.5 million. I mean, that's a big win.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also think it speaks to the importance of Lake Superior to the whole state. You know, we are stewards of the water that flows into the lake. And I think that had a played a role as well.
That was an important part of the discussions, as you know. You know, as we were talking a lot about, you know, we just don't want to have issues with bypassing or different things into that body of water. So
yeah, absolutely. Chris, let me move on to a topic that is easy to acknowledge, I guess, but difficult to dive into. There's been so much civil discord and unrest in our larger picture this year, as well as COVID, that is sort of seems to keep us at our distance, even as our issues are getting more intense and hotter. And no one seems to like this. And yet, different and opposing perspectives are obviously inevitable. What do you see as one of our leaders as guidelines for managing conflict in a way that allows us to address them? We don't want to be just all Minnesota nice and pretend there isn't conflict, but also we want to have mutual respect, obviously, and a recognition of our common ground and those things. I mean, how do you see us fitting into the bigger picture that way?
Well, you know, we on our water tower here in our community, there's a big sign that says it all starts here. And I'm proud of this community because probably, I think, 4 years ago now, the high school got together and in an unheard of, like, they literally started this. They created basically what they called the Civility Summit. And my belief is that there are hurting people out there who have been hurt. That's obvious.
Yep.
And the problem is that there might not be a healthy venue where people can share and exchange ideas. It just feels like we live in a world right now where, you know, somebody might have one idea and somebody has another idea, and there's just very little room for anybody to have that discussion.
It's very easy to vilify.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just, no, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I just, you know, isn't it neat, Katya, that literally a bunch of students in our high school got together and DECA students and said, this is a big issue. And isn't it interesting, almost prophetic, what they talked about 4 years, I think it was 3 years ago, actually. 3 years ago, and they put on a civility summit. Schools from all over the area came, and it literally, many of the schools still now have civility clubs and all kinds of acts of kindness and different things that have come from that. And I really believe that that is the answer, is that people have to be able to get together and start having civil discussion again. But yeah, I don't think anybody wants to see buildings, being broken or fires happening in buildings and things like that. And yet I know there's a lot of pain behind that. I'm so in tune with the fact that the way you have to get out of this starts with you and me, if that makes sense. We each have to say, okay, how do we how can we talk with our neighbors? How can we talk with others?
Yeah.
And so they did a lot of that. They talked about, you know, civility and respect and, you know, kindness, and they had core values that they espoused, and it was really quite neat. It was really well done.
It was so pretty amazing. It
yep.
was.
Yep.
Do you see the city as having any sort of like a structure or a concrete intention around that, or do you just see that you're hopeful that people will come to meetings with good intention? And you know, it does seem like despite things like civility summits, you know, things are not working necessarily in our more
sure.
political realm. And here you are, you know, at the sort of head of a very small political realm. So I'm just wondering, like, how to ensure that voices are heard, like you say, and that people aren't falling into that tendency to just vilify one another. It seems like it's just happened so easily, particularly with people, with all of us having different news sources. And although I like to think, at least locally, everyone's listening to the radio.
Right.
That's one thing anyway.
No, you're making a wonderful point, and that is, I call it intentionality. Intentionality. How is there an attention to this? Are we really making sure we focus on this? And one of the things that's been on my heart, last year was a really, you know, difficult year. Everybody knows that. But it was really hard because it was hard to get communication in and do different things with people when our structures were kind of built around a different way of doing that. And so now we've done this for a year, and now we're kind of figuring it out. And one of the things has been on my heart significantly that I've been talking with our council president and city administrator about is, what does leadership look like, not just being in a position of authority? And I share that because there's this deep belief that leaders and cultures and communities need to be intentional about spending time talking about that and saying, mm-hmm. this is who we are. Now, in a representative small government like we have, where we elect people to go and they're supposed to, you know, represent that,
right?
They carry that water a little bit. So some of those discussions already happened, but being intentional could mean a lot more than just getting together talking about it. I found one of the neat things about our community the last few years is a willingness to say, we talked about it, now we're actually taking the steps to do it. And you've probably seen that more and more. You look at some different projects and different things happening, is like, hey, if mm-hmm. you want to talk about that, that problem has been a problem for a long time. What are you doing to be intentional to take the very first smallest steps towards helping solve that? And that's why, you know, we just got done talking about the Civility Association. It doesn't look like a big deal, or the Civility Summit. It doesn't look like a big deal. But I actually know that now in Ohio, there's Civility Summits happening, and this could actually take off. And so it just takes being intentional and taking those first small steps, Katya. I think that's the real secret. And so has the city done anything to that? No, we have not yet. But that discussion is just starting to happen. Mm-hmm. I think you'll see something this year.
Great. Well, let's go a little bit into some of the a few specific things. I know we're mostly here to talk big picture, but one semi big picture thing is that our school, high school, is about to be paid for, and the school is sort of proactively pulling together different stakeholders from the community to envision its relationship to the city and the financial implications of that, and just want to acknowledge that that's happening, and that that you're part of that, and my husband Mark is part of that, and mm-hmm. I think it's a pretty cool thing that's going on. It's almost a little bit of an example of what you say of being intentional about, you know, there's a transition happening with our finances and the school, and you know, what's that going to look like? How can that best serve the school and the community? So, mostly just want to shout out that that's happening, and thank you for being part of it.
Well, yeah, and it's wonderful. I mean, the bond, so everybody's aware, I think most people probably know this, but the bond is up in a few years that was used to build the school, which basically gives an opportunity to talk about, you know, vision and talk about strategy, and that's kind of that first early stages of it, where basically what I love, again, is I believe this time, as we look at, you know, if there's a need for infrastructure build outs, that there's just really going to be a much more deeper engagement of the community. So I'm hoping that's the case. And, you know, like we talked about the collaboration, here's why I share that. I really feel like when I talked about collaboration, and people coming together, I feel like it's a mayor's responsibility to not just be focused on, you know, what happens with the infrastructure in the community, or, you know, what's our levy, or those kinds of things. It is about the greater good of the whole community. Mm-hmm. And when you look at things like healthcare, and when you look at things like education,
housing,
those are very important. Housing, those are very important things that a city needs to kind of say, how are we doing? And sometimes it's the responsibility of somebody else to actually do the actual work. And sometimes our job is just to kind of grease the skids so that it's easy. But what I tell people is, I think, you know, there was a little bit of a rusty cog around this in our past. And what I'm excited about now is everything I hear from people is, how do we grease that cog? How do we oil it? How do we heat it? And I've seen it starting to not only just churn, Katya, it's starting to spin pretty fast. So it's pretty neat. There's a lot of good things happening, including what the school is trying to do.
Yeah. Wonderful. And maybe another one of those is, and this is, I'm always talking about clean energy, of course, and we just heard about GM going to all electric, Volvo's going to all electric. I just suddenly envision that transportation is going to transform in this country, and we get a lot of tourists, as well as having plenty of our own cars. And I feel like we didn't get a jump start on this. We already have a couple charging stations down by City Hall and a solar panel, and do you have anything? I know probably this comes out in the CIP, which we will continue to talk about in other interviews as well. But wow, like things are a changing. And do you have anything to say about envisioning the next few years as far as our energy goes?
Yeah. First of all, I think it takes public-private sector, of course. But I love what Blake Prince, our electrical superintendent, has done. You know, he's encouraged people, if they want to get solar panels, to talk to him. You know, we had that meeting, it's been a few years now, I think, but we had a really nice meeting. I thought that was very open, very, you know, question friendly and oriented towards how do we solve problems that we have.
Yep.
And what I love is, I think there's like an openness to, okay, what does this look like? I will tell you that, and it's a shameless plug, my daughter, who's opening Cali Suites, is putting in electric charging stations.
Nice.
I don't know what kind, because I know I just heard there's a proprietary type with Tesla, and there's different kinds. So I don't know which kind it is, but I think it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And it kind of, that segues into the question of, how does a city cover the cost if we're the ones, you know, providing the electricity? Are there credits for that? There's just probably a lot of questions around that, and that hasn't been totally addressed. But you're right, Katya, there's going to be a tremendous amount of, I'm sure, electric vehicle traffic coming up the North Shore as that becomes more and more popular and more available in the marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and now here you are for my final question for you, Chris. Looking back on your mayoral tenure, does anything in particular stand out to you? And like, what has been your greatest pleasure, your most formidable challenge, your biggest surprise? What stands out for you? How many years into this are you now? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, so I got, you know, it's been a little over four years.
4 years, that's what I thought. Yep.
Yeah. And I just sat here, I was just pondering what you just said. That's really interesting. Really, I've just felt like the community has rallied around, you know, that vibrancy concept of being really thought of in Minnesota as just this community of excellence. I've just seen so many positive things. And I think the biggest challenge is, the day that I walked into office, you know, I knew two things to be very true. One is, our infrastructure was really, really broken, and it was going to be very expensive to fix it.
Yep.
And two, that we had a major housing problem.
Yep.
And so those two things have been probably the biggest challenges. Housing, we're moving in that direction now. We're doing a lot around that, which is awesome. The infrastructure, the plan has been, now this, we just are going into our fifth year of it. I think it's really starting to be really smooth. I know we had the 8th Street project is all being worked on this summer with the county, so it's collaborative. So those two things are probably the biggest challenges. One of the things, though, that I've seen happen that I'm very, very pleased with is an entrepreneurial spirit has really started to kind of happen within this and around this community. And to me, that is cool because those are the people kind of coming up with ideas and solving problems and doing things. And so I love that. The nonprofit community, they've done a great job. Yeah, I think I'd say the challenges are housing and, yep, and that capital improvement plan because it's millions of dollars.
Yeah, right. Well, I like to think, I mean, I do think we're getting pretty used to every summer, you know, it's going to be an area that's going to be blocked off. And I mean, who knows? Not that I have my finger on the pulse of everything, but it does seem like there is a general acceptance of, we all know this costs money to do it right, and we all know that it needs to happen. So, I think you're right that kind of thing takes time sometimes, and it's just taken a few years of learning to accept reality, essentially, and it's probably good practice because there are a lot of realities coming down the pike that I think will continue to challenge and guide us.
Right.
So, yeah. Anyway, I think, Chris, is there anything else that I have not asked you that you would like to share?
You know, it's a small thing, but I think everybody will smile. You know, when I first got elected, I worked pretty hard to try to get sidewalks fixed. And this year, for the first year, we've dedicated $100,000 towards sidewalk repair. So it may seem like a small thing, but it was something that
not small
started,
to you.
Yeah. So we want people feeling really good and safe when they walk our sidewalks. And so, yeah, you know, it's just kind of a fun thing to kind of leave on. But I do want to say thank you. There's a ton of people in this community who are excited about the vision. They're really wanting to see our community be that place that people are like, wow, that is the nicest community in Minnesota. And you know, whether that's the people, yep, whether that's things we're fixing up, our roads, housing, you know, people saying they figure it out. They solve their problems. I love that. I love that picture.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Swanson. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Gotcha.
You take care. All right. And now here we are on KTWH, What's Happening? And as promised, Kenny Blumenfeld is with me by the phone to do weather tidbits. Good morning, Kenny.
Good morning. How are you?
I am fine. It's a beautiful day out there, and we're wondering what's happening, what's coming down the pike. We really have not had a lot of we sneaked through with a final section ski meet up at Giants Ridge in 40-degree weather and really good grooming, but it does seem like winter is disappearing fast.
Yeah, I won't count it out yet. I mean, March can be a very long month, and April can too, for that matter. But yeah, I mean, we definitely are past, you know, meteorological winter is now over. We have kind of passed the heart of winter, and certainly the, you know, the snowpack is shrinking and is kind of on its way out. I wouldn't count the whole thing out yet. It's the next couple weeks show signs of, you know, at least marginal promise, but I think this is just the broken record where it had, you know, looked like things were going to get really interesting, and then as everything has moved closer, some of that excitement has been, I don't know, tamped down a little bit.
Yeah.
But, it's just kind of a mild, almost boring pattern. We're going to get some exceptional warmth in the region later this weekend and into early next week, and that's going to eat away at a lot of the, you know, I don't even know if you can call it snow anymore in so much of the state. It's just crust.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a crust out there. We haven't put away our skis, but it's seeing what's coming the next couple of weeks, it's hard to imagine. And it is, I noticed since you mentioned this before, that the projections continue to seem to say we might get precipitation, but what I hear you saying is it just seems to be unable to cross over some kind of hump and other forces take over when the time gets closer. I mean, I guess there's really nothing certain you can say about any snow or rain coming.
Yeah, I mean, the weather does get into little patterns that have, something that resembles memory or habits that kind of form within given seasons, and sometimes, not frequently, but sometimes from season to season. And clearly what's been established over the last, 8 to 12 weeks is, the main storm track not really coming through Minnesota, missing us generally to the south or to the east. We haven't had much. There hasn't been much happening way off to the north of us either. So it's really just been kind of the big weather systems hitting the southern and central U.S. and then moving to the east. So what's been happening on the models, you look out 8, 9, 10 days, and there's this big, kind of classical spring snowstorm, and it's just smothering Minnesota. And then, you get a couple more days go by, and the thing starts to shift, 50, 75 miles south. But it's doing that every couple days. So now, what had looked like a really big winter storm for northern Minnesota in the middle of next week, it's still possible, but the whole storm track of that system has shifted south by about 150 miles. So, and it looks a little warmer than it had looked. It's not quite as strong, not quite as snowy, not quite as cold. So, but there's, what we still need precipitation, whether it comes as snow or not. We're in a pretty good deficit here. So,
yeah.
Somewhere looking at.
Yeah, yeah.
Can I just tease something up for you?
Please do. Absolutely.
Yeah, so when we talk about precipitation, it's the easiest to measure variable in the climate, because you could just put a 4-inch plastic rain gauge in your backyard, and as long as there's a little bit of an opening, and that it's not just covered by trees, as long as the rain or snow can get in, it could be front yard too. Almost anyone can do it. And it's also probably the most important climate variable that we measure, because the amount of water that falls is what determines how much water gets into the streams. It determines, are you going to have flooding or not? And so we have a network in Minnesota that we work with, the local soil water conservation district, and we have like the greatest precipitation observing network in the world in Minnesota. But there's also a national program that's kind of similar to ours called COCORAS. And it's a little easier to sign up for. It's a national program, so it has sort of national level support and infrastructure. And this is kind of the equivalent of, a radio station's pledge drive. This is the month where we're trying to get new people signed up for the rainy season, for the growing season. And the name of the program is called COCORAS. It stands for Community Collaborative Rain, Hail, and Snow Network. It's a long acronym. But if you go to COCORAS.org, that's COCORAHS.org, you can sign up and you can become an observer. And I can promise you that in near the lakeshore, and especially up in the highlands, if you talk about friends and people who you visit in Brimson and other areas, but the sort of coastal St. Louis, Lake and Cook counties, and then also up into the highlands, we really need observers there. And if you want to understand the importance, in Two Harbors in 2012, there was an enormous rainfall. Duluth got all the attention, but the heaviest rain actually fell in Two Harbors. And, all we know about the true contours of that heavy rain are from the kind of patchwork of cooperative observers that we have. There's one in Brimson, there's one in Two Harbors, and there's a couple others in that statewide network. But we're really working at a data shortage. And if these data are really important, because they don't just help climatologists. We're kind of down the road users of the data, and they help us make maps. But it's also the National Weather Service uses this stuff. So if we can get people signed up, they could actually become part of the flood monitoring infrastructure for about, $35, which is the cost of the 4-inch clear plastic rain gauge. And all they have to do is enter their stuff in a system, every time it rains, or once, every day, basically. And they're part of the flood warning and monitoring system. So that would be wonderful. CocoRahs.org. CocoRahs.org.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Kenny. Yeah. I'll actually put that in our community event announcements, and we'll get that out for the month, and maybe we'll get a few signups. I think that would be really cool and really important. It's great that you announced that. We are out of time, though, so thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah, until next week. Thanks, Katya.
Yep, bye-bye. That was Kenny Blumenfeld, senior climatologist with the Minnesota DNR.